Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hello, and a very warm welcome to Main Menu, ACB Radio Mainstream's regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. Main Menu is made available to radio reading information services around the world and is available on demand from our website at allthews.acbradio.org/mainmenu.html. On the programme this week, following GW Micro's CSUN 2004 presentation, ACB Radio was treated to a rare interview with Doug Joffrey of GW Micro. And in about 45 minutes' time, we'll hear the start of the Freedom Scientific presentation on JAWS 5. That's to come this week on Main Menu.
This is Marlena Lieberg, direct from CSUN 2004. With me I have Doug Joffrey with GW Micro. Good morning, Doug.
Well, good morning, Marlena.
Can you give us a recap of that presentation and maybe part of that demonstration?
Sure. I can cut down a one-hour presentation into 5 minutes. The first thing that I did during the presentation, again, was we kind of talked about where WindowEyes came from, some of the past things that we've done. And I mentioned the PDF documents that in Adobe Reader, WindowEyes was the first screen reader to support directly reading from Adobe Reader. I talked about our PeopleSoft relationship, where we have PeopleSoft uses WindowEyes exclusively for their testing, their recommendation of their applications, which is all web-based applications, and WindowEyes works excellent with that. So we have a very close relationship with them. I talked about Macromedia Flash, where we were the first screen reader to support Flash, and we have, again, an ongoing relationship with Macromedia, which is beneficial on both sides, so that's sort of exciting stuff. And I talked about the DCM, the Display Chain Manager, about how GW Micro was the company that really spearheaded the necessity of DCM, which allows multiple assistive applications to coexist on the same machine. When Windows 2000 and XP came around and all the assistive technology products started supporting that, it became a nightmare for people to have multiple applications. So while we were at Microsoft, we sort of said, Microsoft, we need something, we've got to be able to fix this. So then we created a consortium with Microsoft, GW Micro, AI Squared, Freedom, and Dolphin, and came up with the specifications for DCM. Then Microsoft again hired GW Micro to actually create that, implement that, and WindowEyes, of course, was the first screen reader to support that. Then the other things I was talking about were error reporting. The number one features of WindowEyes, the number one feature of WindowEyes, rather, is always stability. We never put frilly features or even serious features above stability. Talked about remote computing. So WindowEyes, of course, was the first screen reader to support Citrix Metaframe, terminal services, remote desktop. And actually, during the presentation, I gave an actual live demonstration logging into our Citrix server, which was in Indiana. So luckily, all the internet was up, and it
went
flawlessly. It had a great connection, and it was just seamless as that went through, as it typically is. We also set standards for, like, Internet Explorer interface. We weren't the first to have the virtual mode, or the MSA mode, as we call it. I think that actually goes to Arctic Technologies. I think they had.
Yes, I remember that from WinVision.
That's right. So they get credit for coming up with that idea. But I think we've kind of set the bar for how we implement that. And a lot of the other screen readers now are kind of molding into that as well, especially with our latest 4.5 release. Well, the multi-user interface, I think we've sort of set the standard for having multiple users, especially now that we've got Citrix support and things where you can have thousands of users coming in. So you need to be able to have WindowEyes specific multi-user features, and we have that. The Braille interface, we weren't, I was going to say we weren't the first, we certainly weren't, we were the last screen reader to support Braille. But I think that the interface that we've done, we've seen a lot of the other screen readers kind of start using some of the ideas that we've done, because again, when we implement something, we think it out ahead of time, and then we do it right, not just get it out there quickly so our marketing guys can have a blast with it. The ease of use and the customer support are some other things that I think we set the standard for. So that was something that we talked about in the past. Then with the current version, again, I talked about the Internet Explorer. I went through all of our verbosity options that you can do in Internet Explorer, all of our hotkeys to be able to move between headers and lists and tables and forms and frames and all of that business. So I went through all of that, described all of that. We're W3C compliant. Again, we went out there, looked at Homepage Reader, we looked at other screen readers, we said, how can we do better? And I think that's what we did with our 4.5. And here's where I actually gave the live demonstration of Citrix connecting to our server. And I talked about synthesizers. WindowEyes 4.5 certainly supports more synthesizers than any other screen reader, and we ship with more. We ship with the DeckTalk Access 32, Explorer, which comes, Eloquence, which comes with 9 languages, RealSpeak, which comes with 6 languages, and the Microsoft Text-to-Speech are all included with WindowEyes Professional. The standard does not come with the RealSpeak, but Professional comes with all of those. And then we talked about some of the other changes that 4.5 had in the hotkey dialog. In the past, when you go to the hotkey dialog of WindowEyes, which allows you to define what you want hotkeys to be on the keyboard, it came up with a dialog of about 170 hotkeys that you could change. And that was a little bit difficult to manage with so many. So we broke that up into different things, cursoring type hotkeys, mouse hotkeys, MSAA, miscellaneous, and MSAA hotkeys. I talked about our list view header support. When you go to a list view, like in Windows Explorer, when you're looking at your files, you can view that in large icons, small icons, detailed, or whatever. If you have it in detailed view, it gives you columns visually on the screen. And as you read down the rows of those elements in that table, in the past it would just read you the file name, maybe the file type, file size, and whatever. I think there was another column which I never remember. But now what we have the option of doing is reading those headers as it goes across. So on complicated list views, it's very important because some of the columns may be blank, you didn't know it because it skipped or whatever. So, you know, if you heard 35, 99, 66, 44, you know, what does that mean? So we give the headers if those headers are up there in that list view. And talked about the load before startup options with WindowEyes now. You now have the ability, as you did before, to have WindowEyes not come up, of course, when you boot up your system. It can come up before startup, meaning the login screen must be. Or it can, now the two new options that we added are after you log in, it can come up for the current user, or it can come up after login for all users. And again, with our Citrix environment, it's great now that you can have it log in after the user has logged in. So sighted people don't get bothered with it, and only the blind individual who is logged in would have WindowEyes load for them. And so it's a lot easier than before. You'd have to go and manually go in and add it to the startup group and blah, blah. Now it's all done through a menu, so it's just very simple to do. And a couple other things, we talked about the speech rate now. We went from 10 rates to 100 rates that we support, assuming the synthesizer supports it. And I gave an example, we still support the Echo PC, which only has 2 rates. So if the synthesizer itself doesn't support it, we do that. But I think we finally dropped support for some of those that don't offer speech rates. I mean, they just aren't around today. But we certainly do support a wide variety of synthesizers. Of course, stability improvements always, the responsiveness improvements, and all of the features that 4.5 have over the previous version are listed in a README file. So it goes in pretty good detail of all of the changes that we have made between those two versions. Then we talked a little bit about our training program. Clarence got up and discussed some of our training options and things, which has been going very well. And then I got into what people were really there for, which is the new features of WindowEyes, where we're going to go post 4.5.
Now, before you get into that, let me ask you a question. Can you elaborate a bit about the training program if people want to find out when Clarence and crew or whomever would be in their area, or they want to set up a training program? What do they do?
Well, for full details, I would suggest they go to our webpage. So you can just go to www.gwmicro.com/training. That has all the details there. Or if you have even more specific details, you should probably call Clarence or send him off an email. It's just clarence@gwmicro.com. And he can fill you in on all the details. But typically the way that it works is if you can get a group of 3 or more together, I believe, and I don't know all the details, but I believe it's like $250 per day that you can do. It's a 2-day training. You need at least 3 people. And if you have at least 3 people, then we will actually come to your location and set up a training program. But it is based on a 2-day type environment. It's based mainly on just the basics of WindowEyes, the basics of the Windows itself, applications like Word. They go through and talk about how to use that. So it's great if you're especially new to the system, new to WindowEyes. It's a great way to actually get some of that training. And one of the things that they just offered, or rather just started in their training program, is if you've had training in the past, that's great for that version. But of course, WindowEyes is always evolving. We always come out with new versions. And so if you want to get caught up in the new version now, we have an online version of one-on-one training. So you can, and I don't remember what the cost is, but the details will be on our webpage. But it allows you to go through an online training session to where we can get you up to speed with the current version. So we're basically just taking off of what's new since your last training session. So that's an option that you can take.
Great. Okay, on to new features.
All right, the new stuff, that's always exciting stuff. Well, the goal of our next version is to support Office better. We realize that there's no one screen reader that does everybody's needs. There's always strengths and weaknesses of every screen reader. Unfortunately, I see so much out in the field where it's sort of the recommendation is made before the assessment, or the assessment is almost like irrelevant because they've already made up their mind of what screen reader they want to pick for them. And that's unfortunate for the user because they're molding the user into the screen reader instead of the screen reader fitting a better match into the user. And so, but one of the areas, I mean, I think we have so many areas of WindowEyes where we are better than our competition. But to be honest, one of the weakest areas was Office. If you were a basic Office user, basic word processing, basic spreadsheet, no problem at all. But if you wanted to do advanced things in Excel, you wanted to do some advanced Word things, and believe me, it has a lot of advanced features that I had to learn that I know now more than I'd ever want to know about Word. But so we have to support those things, and we realize that that's important. So we're now putting all of our emphasis, all of our resources into supporting Office better, and I'll show you some of those features that we have now. But some of the other non-Office things that we can kind of do maybe in the background if we can, but it's certainly not going to hold up our release of our Office support. We've got some big things going on in the background, which I hope make it, and I don't want to discuss, but if they don't, again, we do not want to hold up this release. But some of the other smaller things are, we now have a color dictionary. So we've been asked this a lot. Or in the past, you might hear the color might be R255, G255, B255, on R0, B0, G0, which is white on black. But that's garbage. You don't want to listen to all that stuff. So now we have the ability of setting up specific colors for certain RGB values. Now there are 16 million plus colors that you can have, so that's, you can't obviously set up colors for all of those. But we did create about a 500 entry into our global dictionary. The dictionary works very similar to all our other dictionaries, meaning you can have the global dictionary, or you can get very specific to an application. So maybe in application X, instead of being red on white, maybe that means alert or something. So you could actually even give it something like that. But what we've done above and beyond what our competition does is that because there are 16 million plus colors, you can't define them all. What we decided to do was, if you come across an RGB value that doesn't match exactly, we'll say shade of whatever it's closest to. So instead of, you know, instead of saying some whatever, it might say shade of gold or shade of red or something like that. And so that way you're always going to get a close match to that and not be thrown to an RGB value if you just didn't have it defined. And so that actually works very nice. And I'll show you that as I show you some of the Office stuff that we get into. We've also increased some of our Braille support, so we now have Word mode. So instead of breaking a word at the end of a Braille display, it will actually cause it to
wonderful. Run. Wonderful. I'm excited for that.
A lot of people have been asking for that. We've actually had that option up in our dialogue, but we've disabled it because we didn't have time to implement it initially back when we did the Braille support. But it's always been on our wish list. People have always been asking for that. So now that works very nicely. And we've cleaned up a few little other problems that people have told us about with Braille. I think if you were in grade 2, we always collapsed spacing, even if you didn't want it to. And so that was a little minor bug that we resolved. We also now support the Inca, the Focus, and the PacMate displays. And
actually, let me ask you one Braille question that came up just the other day, actually. In a session we covered, which did a comparison of JAWS Braille and WindowEyes Braille. And one of the things that came out in that session was a question about the Braille settings in WindowEyes being global only. And I'm just wondering if you're ever going to take a look at that and think about making them more app-specific configurable.
Yes, we have been asked that several times. In some cases, you have to be careful what you ask for because you might get it, because in some cases that could be annoying. Like our hotkeys, for instance, are specific to an application. But if a user wanted to make a global change, it's a little bit more work for them to make a global change. So if we do that with Braille, you're going to have that make it a little bit more difficult if you want that setting to be global now. And so we want to make that transition as easy as possible and maybe make the global a little bit easier. So we're still thinking about that, but that is definitely on our list of something
good
that we seriously are considering
good
doing.
Good.
Yes.
So I interrupted you, so back on your train.
Oh. Just tell me to shut up whenever you want. Regarding the Inca, the Focus, and the PacMate, if you do want support for that today with 4.5, you can let us know. We can send you a little upgrade to your existing 4.5 to support those Braille displays. So you don't have to wait for our next release if you want access to those three displays right now. So that was it for some of the other non-officey things. But then we went in and I specifically talked about some of the Word things that we did, or that we have done, where we're going to go with that in Excel and PowerPoint. And I'm going to go ahead and launch up Word. All of our support will be for Word 2000, XP, and 2003. And somebody asked me if our current version of WindowEye supported Office 2003, because people were thinking it didn't. It does. We just didn't ship the set files with our 4.5 because 2003 wasn't shipping at that time. So if you go to our webpage, you can download the set files for 2003 and you can run WindowEye 4.5 on it. But our new Office support is definitely geared for 2000 and above. But I'm going to go ahead and launch Office, or rather Word 2003 in this example here. Let me go ahead and start that. I've got the WindowEye 4.5 Plus, you can think of it, running right now. But I'm going to go ahead and start up on it.
Microsoft Talk, menu close. Okay. Button, start, Microsoft Word.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and silence that. But I've created a couple documents that I want to use to show some of the new features that we've got in there. So I'm going to load one of those documents now.
Menu close.
This particular document... This particular document has just like one line of text at the top, two blank lines. It's got a table that is three rows by five columns. Some of the cells are filled in, some are blank. Then it's got a blank line under the table, and then it's got a lot of text that fills the rest of the page with three columns of text. I just took section one of our manual and told Word to make it into three columns. So visually, I see three columns on that screen. So I'm just going to down arrow through this document, and let's just see what we hear. First line, I have blank lines turned off, so we're not going to hear anything. So that was blank. Blank again. I could turn on our blank feature, so it would say blank. Let me down arrow one more time.
This is a test of table one, three rows, five columns. R1C1.
So it told me I'm in table one. It told me that I'm on R1C1, so I'm in the first cell of this table, top left cell of this table, and it read me the first line that I landed on within this cell. The old WindowEye would have said, first of all, it wouldn't have said anything about a table, and it would have said, this is a test, one, again another, last column up. Would have read right across all of those columns that are across there. So now, of course, our reading is limited to the cell that you're in, which is exactly what you'd want to be able to do. So if I down arrow again,
the cell width.
That's the second line of the current cell. The old WindowEye would have said, a cell with two, test, first row, would have read right across all of those guys that are in there. But one of the annoying things with Word is that it gives you very little keyboard access to navigating a lot of the elements that you can put within a Word document. The only way to really navigate a table inside Word, you know, leaving screen readers out of this, is to hit the Tab key. And that will take you from cell to cell, and it'll highlight the cell contents and go across. But that's left to right, top to bottom. If you just wanted to go down to the next row and stay in the same column, you can't do that. You have to tab across. You can down arrow and eventually get down to that thing, but there's really no easy way to navigate it like you could in Excel spreadsheet, for instance. And also, what's even more annoying is you get to the bottom right of that table and you hit Tab, and if you're a Word user, what that does is inserts another row for you. So you don't know as a blind person, is there a blank row there? Did I just insert it?
Oh, yes, been there, done that.
So it's very annoying. Now, with WindowEye, when you hit Tab off of that, it would have told you you're all of a sudden in row four, and you knew that it was a three-row table, so you can kind of think you did it, but then you got to delete it, and it's just a mess to do that. So what we did was we give you keyboard access in where Word falls short. So in this case, we give you similar access to what you would do inside in a web page table. So you can basically, in IE, you can do insert arrow keys, and we haven't set any keys up at all to what we want these to default to. So I'm not even going to tell you what the keystrokes are because they're going to change. I just very quick and dirty put in some keystrokes. But these keystrokes are definable by you. There's now another option under the hotkey dialog that says Office. And all these new hotkeys now are in that Office section. So you can change them even if you don't like what we have. But for instance, I'm going to go ahead and hit our cell right. So if I hit our move cell right hotkey.
R1C2, this is a test.
So I'm in the second column, I'm still in the first row, and it read the cell contents. Now if I just want to go right down one cell.
R2C2, run.
So I just went down a cell, and the cursor's moving along with me as I go along, and it's going to read the cell contents. Now I have hotkeys to say, take me to the last cell of the current row, or the first cell of the current row, or top column of the current column, whatever. You can move all the way around. You can read from the top to the cell, from the left to the cell, and you read in all those directions and that type of thing. So pretty much what you can do in an IE table, you can now do here. The only difference is in IE, you have to turn on our table mode. Here you don't have to turn it on. You just go into the table and you start navigating around, and it just works very nicely as you do that. And of course, as you're reading along by line, it's again going to be limiting to the cell width. So let me just keep on down arrowing through this table. So I'm going to down arrow again.
R3C2.
So the cell that I was in was just one line, so it took me actually down a cell again. Down arrow again.
Leaving table one.
So it told me I'm leaving the table one. Also, a lot of this verbosity that we're hearing, entering the table and the row one, column one, and all that business, is going to be definable by verbosity options. Right now, we're forcing all this verbosity on just because we're in the development phase. We want to hear all this stuff. But eventually, you'll be able to pick and choose what you want to hear, what you don't want to hear as you're moving around through this. Also, of course, header support as you're moving around. It might be important to instead of reading R1, C1, or whatever, maybe you want to read sales and, you know, blah, 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 2003, 2004. Whatever, so we can hear those headers. And so we'll give you the same ability that you can pretty much with IE be able to tell us, use first row, first column, use the third row as the headers, whatever. You'll be able to set that up as you're reading through a table and you're moving along. So I went down arrow past the table, so I'm in that blank line after the table. Let me hit down arrow one more time.
Column 1 of 3, section 2 of 2, introducing.
So it told me I'm on column 1 of 3, and visually I see three columns of text of information up there. And it told me I'm in section 2 of 2, because my particular document has two sections. Everything above the three columns was one section. This is a Word thing. Everything from below the table and on is section 2. So it told me I'm on there. And again, this is verbosity. If you don't want to hear, you can turn it off. And it read, introducing. The old WindowEyes would have not read any of that other stuff, and it would have said introducing and incorporated many, and the third column happened to be blank at that particular line, so it would have stopped there. But it would have read across the columns, where now it's confined to the columns. Let me down arrow again.
WindowEyes.
Again, it's just reading this column. It's not reading the other two columns to the right. There's a blank line.
This section of them.
It said this section of them. I've done a couple things in this document to show some of the other features. The word section is underlined. This has been something that's been asked of us for a long time, is that we never told an individual about underlined attributes within Word. So now we have that ability. And one of the ways that we're doing this, and what's also very cool, is that right now what we're doing is we're not getting this information, any of this information you've been hearing, has not been coming from the screen. In the past, and that's why we're called a screen reader, is it would read what we call off an off-screen model, which is our representation of what's up on the screen. It's very difficult for a screen reader to maintain an exact one-for-one representation all the time because Windows is so complicated in what it does. Dialog box can come up and half cover a W, and when it goes away, the half it was covering is written, but not the other half. WindowEyes has to put all this together and make sure that we're in sync. Well, no screen reader is always going to be 100% accurate. That's why they all have a screen redraw key to refresh the screen and get it back into sync. Well, now with what we're doing with Office is we're actually going to Word and say, give me this information. Build the line using Word instead of using our off-screen model. So we're always 100% accurate. You don't even have to have this visible. You can minimize it. You could do it. You can have it scrolled off the screen and we can do it. That's the beauty of being able to talk directly to it. So no more you're going to have, well, wait a minute, that didn't read right, and refresh the screen. Ah, okay, now it's back. So let me go ahead and turn on our attribute feature, which this has always been there with Windows.
Let me turn it on.
So it's had attribute changes on, or attribute changes on, as I like saying. And let me just read that same line that we were just at.
Yes. Times New Roman 12-point underlined, black on white, section, Times New Roman 12-point black on white,
Okay, so first of all, you heard the black on white. You didn't hear RTV divide, UTV divide, BTV divide on R0, B00. So we're using our color dictionary by default in this case, but it then told me that section was underlined that we're in there. One of the things that I've noticed while I was playing with this is our attribute feature, what we're also going to be doing with this is if a particular attribute doesn't change, to not reread it. Like here you heard Times New Roman 12 point each time. That never changed. Uh-huh. You also heard black on white each time, and that didn't change. So we're going to make it so it'll only read what's actually different between those, and that'll speed that up quite a bit. Let me down arrow again, though.
WindowEyes. Times New Roman 12-point normal. Red on white. Manual.
So the word manual is red.
Red,
and it
okay.
is visually red. Let me down arrow one more time.
Times New Roman 12-point normal. Shade of gold on white. Provides. Times New Roman 12-point normal.
So that was the shade of gold. Shade of gold on white. Because that particular color of gold wasn't in our dictionary, but it was close to a shade of gold. And visually, it looks like some sort of gold. And so we just read it that way. So that's kind of a very nice feature instead of just backing up to the RGB values. A couple other things inside Word that we've done are, let me hit the insert key.
Over time.
Hit it again. I'm not sure why Word is acting funny on me here, but when I'm hitting the insert key, the status line, when it does change, WindowEyes is reading the correct change.
Over time.
So now it's reading over time. I'm not sure why that is doing
there it goes.
So I have to check my what's going on. But it was actually, in this case, it was actually doing good because WindowWise was reading exactly the status of what the status line showed.
And again, that's similar to what the old Arctic used to do, except Arctic used to call it tippy over mode.
Well, the problem is that we used to have this in there. The problem is that we can't treat it like caps on, caps off, because
right.
we know the status of that, because that's an operating system
right.
function. But in an application, it has the choice of whether it starts an insert or overtype. We can't go to the system and say, give me the status of insert. We have to go to the application, in this case, and ask. And so in the past, we would just say insert whenever you press it, because we didn't know if you were in overtype insert, so we just said insert. Where now we can actually tell you if we're in overtype or insert or whatever as we're going through that, because we're going to Word and getting that information. So that works very nicely. Another thing that people have been begging us to do is right now, if I look at the status line, it shows me that I'm at 3.3 inches,
oh,
line 14,
yes.
column 1.
Yes.
So you know where I'm going with this one.
I was going to ask you.
That's good. So the 3.3 inches is good because that tells me how far I'm down, but the column 1 has absolutely no meaning at all of where that's going to be displayed on the page. So now what we've done is we've mapped our existing hotkey that says give me the cursor position, which normally would give you pixels relative to the application.
Yes.
Now it gives us
1.3 inches from left, 3.3 inches from top page 1.
Oh,
so it tells me
great.
How many, and these are from the edge of the page, not from the edge of the margins or whatever,
yes.
but it tells you how
yes.
far you're down, how far you're over, and you can guarantee that cursor position is at that. So whatever you set up Word for, whatever measurements, and right now we're in inches, it will read that. So whatever unit you've set it up for, that's what we will read it back to you in. So that's a very nice way to be able to get that going. The final thing I can show with this particular document is let me go back to the top of the document with Control Home.
Top of document.
That's a Word
column
thing.
One.
Now we've set up two hotkeys to go to the next and previous of, let's see if you can figure this out. So I'm going to go to the next occurrence of something.
Spelling multiple 1 and 13. Table 1, 3 rows, 5 columns. R1C1.
Okay, so it told me I went to a spelling error of 1 of 13. So there are 13 spelling errors. And visually, you can see, if you have this enabled, you can visually see a red squiggly line under the misspelled word. So I can look at this document real quick and see a few words that are squiggly. And it said there are 13 of them, because I can't even see all 13, because this is like a 6-page document. But it will take the cursor to that first occurrence of the misspelled word. It will tell you the misspelled word. And because this happened to be in a table, it also told me I entered a table and I was in cell 1 of the table. And I can read all the context I want of this particular line. But Word does have a nice feature where I can bring up its context menu now. With Shift-F10, just bring up the context menu.
Context menu.
No item is highlighted. It just brought it up. But if I down arrow,
multiple.
It shows me the first suggestion word.
Multiple.
And if I get to one that what was that again? I can have it spelled. First press just says it again. Next press.
M-U-L-T-I-P-L-E-S.
And if that's what I really meant, I could hit enter and it would replace the word at that point.
Menu closed.
I just escaped out of the menu. But I can do Control F12 to go to the next occurrence.
Spelling packaging 2 of 13. Column 1 of 3, leaving table 1. Section 2 of 2.
So again, it tells me I left the table, I'm in section 2 of 2, and it read me the misspelled word, and I could read the current line it's in, get all the context, do the Shift F10 thing of business. Let me do Control, or I'm not going to tell you what the key is.
Grammar window eyes is designed for computer users in the levels novice to advanced. 1 of 9.
So there it took me to a grammatical error, which was 1 of 9. Now, if I have either one of these turned off or all of these turned off, then this key won't take me anywhere. So if you have this feature enabled, window eyes will take you to it. A lot of times I like to keep the grammatical errors off because my document's always green when I write something. So I turn that off, but I can then go through my misspelled words. You can still go through the spell check dialog and show all this stuff, but sometimes people prefer to go to this method. And there's a hotkey to go to the previous of all of these that you want to as well.
That's great.
Yes.
That's great.
So that's enough of this document. Let me load one more document. We talk about a couple more features inside Word that we have existing functionality for, and then we'll talk about where we're going to be going with some of the other stuff that's not quite finished yet. But so let me go ahead and load that other document.
And two, menu closed. Microsoft Word.
Okay, what I did was I loaded the document that is actually a form that I received. Somebody sent me this. It's titled Section 508 Electronic and Information Technology Conference Checklist. So I'm sure somebody was trying to get me to go to a conference or something. And it has a form that you have to fill out some data. And let me just tab between this.
Edit box. 2 and enter version number as of each to be acquired or developed.
Tab again.
Edit box. 2 enter name of requiring official.
So it's actually going through now and reading this information
yes.
where the old WindowWise would
yes.
not have read nearly this good. You could sort of get WindowWise to work with forms, the 4.5, but it obviously isn't as seamless as this is here. So what it will do is, if the designer of the form, they have a couple ways of giving you the field information or the field name of this particular element, this in this case an edit box. When they create the form, they have the ability of going in and creating some text that will be displayed on the status line. They call that status text. And visually, I see that displayed on the status line right now. WindowEyes is reading that information that's out there. It's not getting it because it's visually on the status line. It's just that's what it's called and that's where it goes. But if they don't supply that, which a lot of them don't, they also have the option of giving a little bit of help text, which if you press F1, it pops up a window and puts that text up in that window. WindowEyes will read that if the status text isn't there. If they didn't supply either one of those two, then of course we'll go to the screen, and by screen you really know I mean we'll go directly to Office, and we'll get what is close to that control and try to treat that as the field name. So you will get that information. Let me tab just a couple. I'm skipping a bunch of edit boxes here.
Checkbox. Q3, is this a new purchase? Unchecked.
So even checkboxes, there's only three form elements. I think there's edit boxes, checkboxes, and there's like a pull-down list that you can do in a Word document. And WindowEyes, of course, supports all those. If I hit space.
Space. Check.
We can do that. We can reread the information, the field name, if we want to reread it. It's our field name hotkey.
Q3, is this a new purchase?
You can speak the status of the field.
Check.
With our speak summary, and it'll tell you if it's checked or whatever it is in that case. So forms pretty much just work right now as you deal with that. One of the other cool things, I tapped the caps lock by mistake, so I'm going to turn it off.
Caps lock.
So it doesn't catch me later. I'm going to go ahead and hit a keystroke that is similar to, if you're familiar with our 4.5 IE interface, it's sort of similar to the insert tab dialog. Mm-hmm. It pops up a list box of listing different elements depending on the radio button setting that you've chosen. It defaults to showing all the links that are on that web page, but you can go and show all the tables and the anchors and the lists and the headers, and there's like six or eight different things that you can choose from that will show it in that list. I'm going to hit a similar keystroke here inside Office.
List box, F4 fields, 2-3, is this a new purchase?
So what this did was, I'm going to silence it, but this brought up a dialog, and right now it's defaulting to all the form elements that are in this form, and it gave me a list of all of those elements, and how many were in that element?
2-3, is this a new purchase? 12 of 65.
So there's 65 editable fields or form elements on this.
That's very cool.
And I can arrow up and down to whatever I like. I go home. Okay, so enter name of whatever that is to be acquired or whatever. So if I hit enter, it will then take me to that form element, and I can then fill in that form element, whatever I want to do. But one of the things that we're going to be doing to this dialog is right now it's only form elements. But next what we'll be doing is, actually let me get a list of all of the things because I never remember. Okay, this dialog is actually going to have, beyond the form elements, it'll show tables, if you want to show all the tables that are in this document. Comments, it'll let you see all the comments and you can press enter on it, it'll take you to that element that has it. Hyperlinks that are in there, inline objects, spelling errors that are up there, grammatical errors that we saw, it could put them up in this list box and you could just go to what you want. Revisions, which is a feature we'll talk about shortly. Bookmarks, announce footnote or endnote, and next spelling, well, no, that's it. So that's it. So those elements will be able to be listed up in that list box. And what we've seen, again, and this is kind of what we do, is we looked at what's out there, we made the specifications, and made it a very well-thought-out design before we start implementing. And one thing that I saw when I was looking at what's out there is they have similar functionality, but they've got like different hotkeys for each of those lists. And to me, that's just more hotkeys you got to remember, more keyboard conflict potential, and all of that. So we like to just consolidate it, make it right, make it a clean interface from the beginning, instead of all this patchwork hacking on top of each other. So we think that feature is going to be used a lot to be able to move around in those elements. Some of the other things I'm just looking through my list here that we're going to be looking at. Of course, you'll be able to go between headers within the different heading styles and things like that are within a document. We're going to have a dialog that you can press that will pop up a list box similar to insert E, which is element properties in IE, that you can pop it up and it'll give you all the agonizing detail about the element of where the cursor position is, give you all of that information. Borders and things like that, you can have all sorts of borders, you can have marching ants going around a border, whatever. We can tell you all that information upon request that you want to know, or verbosity settings. Lists, of course you can do lots of things with lists inside of Word documents. We can tell you all of that information. We can, if it's a bulleted type of list, we can tell you the type of bullet that it is and all of that good stuff. The autocorrects, autocorrect feature, it puts something up there visually, we can tell you that that's there. The smart tags, of course, even 4.5 supported the smart tags. comments, footnotes and endnotes and things like that will be able to give you that information. The track changes option, which is actually a very powerful feature.
Yes, it is.
We started using that in-house because I didn't realize it was there, but it's a great way to be able to do that. But it's not been fully accessible in the past. So now, as you're moving around, it can tell you that this chunk of text was deleted by such and such, if you have, you know, depending on your verbosity settings, and replaced with this whatever. So you can get a history of the changes to a particular document. So that works very nice. Of course, if you've got embedded pictures, we can tell you that. We're looking at if there's a possibility of being able to know the language style, if Word can give us that, to maybe do what we do in IE, to switch the synthesizer on the fly, if we can do that. So those are some of the big things. There's a lot, the specifications I'm looking at is a 6-page document that we actually created that goes through that. So it's a very well thought out specification to be able to make sure that Office and all of its elements and things like that are going to be exposed. And of all the three Office elements that we're going to be working with, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, Word is by far the most complicated of all of those. So we feel that once we get this done, the others are going to be very simple. But in Excel, of course, we're going to be doing things like not having to go to the screen to get the information, because that's been very difficult, again, because of the off-screen model issues we discussed. Trying to find that little pretty rectangle that they're using to get the content, it's just a mess. So we're going to be going off and directly asking Excel for all this information. But when you get to things like in a cell where you could type in a paragraph into a cell, but it might only show the first three words. So you need to know the difference. You need to know what's visible and you need to know what's there. So we'll certainly tell you that. And on a formula, it's the same way. The results are shown, but the formula is in the background. So again, you'll have that ability.
Let me just clarify, because this is critical. From my perspective as an Excel user, one of the most difficult things, and I've designed a fair number of Excel spreadsheets, but one of the most difficult things is visually, I never quite know if all of the verbiage that I've placed in one cell is really there. And so what you're telling me now is that I will be able to know what essentially shows up on the screen or on the hard copy and what doesn't?
That's right. You'll have the ability of knowing what you're really seeing, because the rest of it's clipped for whatever reason. You have the ability of opening it up so it's all visible. It's an Excel feature. But no, you need to know what's been clipped, because just because you hear it doesn't mean it's
yes,
going to be
printed. Yes, I have learned that the hard way.
That can be rather embarrassing.
Yes. Oh, yes. That's for an off-air story.
And certainly we'll give you the ability of being able to set the row or the column that might be used for headers as you're moving across within the document. Right now, you can do that with 4.5, but it's very difficult to change it if it's not the first row, first column, and that type of thing. So we'll be able to lock in on that. We're also going to allow you to be able to save these settings per document. So if I'm in this spreadsheet, well, my row headers are on row 3, but in this document, it's 1 or whatever. So we can automatically sense what document you have loaded and bring in those parameters specifically for that document. So that will work very nicely as well. And from the groups that we had here, we had a couple sessions, private sessions in our suite that talked about all this, and they gave me some good feedback of other things that they would like to be able to save, specific per document, things like that. So that's definitely something that I think will evolve into more and more over time, but that worked nicely. And of course, the charts and the graphs and things inside Excel that you can display, we'll be able to describe those better than what we do today and give you all of that information. So Excel certainly is going to work much better than it does now. And the PowerPoint, that's probably of the three, that's going to be the easiest for us to deal with. But because that's sort of usable now, but it takes some work. But that will just plunk in as well.
Will there be Braille support for PowerPoint?
Well, that's a very good question, because I brought that up at both sessions as well, is that right now it's difficult, and we're trying to come up with some way, because in speech, you can just read the contents of that slide. It's no big deal. It just reads it. But in Braille, you can't just scroll all that up unless you're a speed reader and be able to read that. So you need some way to be able to go down maybe line by line with the Braille display to be able to read it line by line at your leisure and that type of thing. So yes, we plan on doing something like that if at all possible to be able to get that out. So that, in a nutshell, is where we're going. There's a lot more to this whole Office thing that we're going to be doing with. But those are some of the highlights that we plan on doing.
Now that you've gotten us all excited, and everybody on the edge of their seat, the next question is when?
When is always a very difficult subject, especially in this market, because I mean, we can set all of our goals and our time frames and everything, but all of a sudden then Microsoft will come to us and say, oh, we're going to have this thing on Longhorn, by the way. Do you want to support that? Well, okay. So then everything goes out the window as far as our timeline, because now we got to work on this or other applications. So we're always being pulled in all directions without any notice at all, and we've got to drop everything and go do that. So those things are always tugged at us. If I had anything I'd want in the world, my goal would be to be in public beta by the summer shows. Is that realistic? If we don't sleep at night and we spend the next time, my goal is to do that. Certainly by closing the gap time-ish, October-ish or something like that, we'll certainly have something out. But the sooner the better, because we know that this needs to get out. And again, we don't want to let any of the other things that I would like to put in this release to hold up the Office stuff. We know that the Office is one of the big holes that we have right now, and we plan on raising that bar and making a big hole for our competitors now because of what we've done with that. So.
That's great. Just a couple of general questions. What about Java support? Where is WindowEyes in that arena these days?
I was surprised at my formal presentation. I purposely didn't put anything in about Java, and I'll sort of say why. But I thought for sure somebody would ask me about it. Nobody did, so I was like, whew, okay.
See, we have very sophisticated listeners on ACB Radio.
Java is one of those things that we definitely know we need to support, because more and more applications are going that way. I realize that they're out there and we have to deal with them. So that's one of the big things that we're kind of doing in the background. And again, I don't want to talk too much about it, but I think it's going to kind of up the bar in Java support right now. We know that some of our competitors support Java, but we also know that a lot of people are not happy with that. It's just, it gets them by. And we don't want to get people by. We want to make it good access. And so we've got a good partnership going that we can work with a great organization that is helping us get this Java support enabled. But again, I don't want that to hold up our Office. But I can tell you, if it comes out with our Office, all the better. But if it doesn't, it will be that next high priority after Office.
All right. And then what about Flash and Flash Macromedia?
Well, as I mentioned, we have a great relationship with Macromedia. And for the Flash, where the developer is keeping accessibility in mind, it's going to work and work very nicely. Bob Regan was actually here. He actually is the one that paid for our internet access at our booth. And so we were showing Flash pages and things like that that's up there. And so we're certainly working with them. We know they've got some new technology coming out, which could be a little bit scary, but they know that. And we're working really hard, hand in hand. But we've got some non-disclosure agreements and such that I can't talk too much about that. But we're trying to keep them honest, and they're trying to work as hard as they can with us. So.
Great. And lastly, have GW Micro thought about or have any future plans for kind of bridging with some of the scanner technologies, say in your case something like Kurzweil? I'm not quite sure that I understand this question, so I'm trying to synthesize it the best I can. But in other words, I think what the caller was asking is, I don't want to have to learn 6 million sets of keystrokes. I want to be able to go into my scan and read software and use the same keystrokes and the same concepts that I use when I'm just in my screen reader.
Yeah, it's difficult. We all get our own little world. You get the OCR developers out there kind of doing their own little thing. You get our screen readers out there doing their own thing. We make sure that we work in tandem with each other, but we don't really try to integrate them together. But I thought that OpenBook had the ability of switching to WindowEyes keyboard layouts. Last time I had saw that, they do allow you to switch their keys to similarly to WindowEyes keystrokes and things like that. But
yeah,
we could have a closer relationship with them and Kurzweil, of course, as well, and try to maybe integrate that a little bit better. They work now. I mean, I don't know if it's relating to keystrokes, if it's relating to just being when you switch to a self-talking application, that's always an issue with screen readers because you don't want double speaking, so
yes,
you need to make sure that the screen reader shuts down or set up the self-talking application to not be self-talking so the screen reader can talk in that case and things like that. And then you get it, if they're also driving their own Braille display, how does that fight with our issue of dealing with the Braille display and things like that? So there could be better communication, and I'd like to see that happen to where we could coexist a little bit friendlier together with each other, but
okay,
that will take time.
Now tell me, how do people get a hold of folks at GW Micro? And if people are interested in downloading a demo, is there one available, and how do they get that?
Sure. Of course, the demo that we have is our official 4.5, so all of this Word features and functionalities that I've been showing are not there. But you can certainly go to our webpage, which is just www.gwmicro.com, and from there you can go off and download a demo of WindowEyes. You can get more training information, you can get more sales information, cost of things like that. You can certainly send an email to sales@gwmicro.com if you have a sales question, to support@gwmicro.com if you have a technical question. You can certainly call our office at area code 260-489-3671. You can fax us information if you want. You can get on our list. We have a couple lists that are, we actually have two lists that are that might be of interest to people. And you can go to our webpage, go to support, and you can actually enable yourself to get on these lists or off these lists if you want to do that as well. There's a form there that you can fill out to get on the list. But the one is GW-info, which is a customer base list. We house it, we monitor, all of the support guys read that list. But it's a list of other WindowEyes users out there, and that's a great resource. If you have questions, we don't always see all the applications. We certainly don't know all the answers. So it's a great resource to list to bounce ideas off of everybody that's out there. And it's not a heavy list. On a typical day, you might get 30 messages, not even that many, maybe 20 messages, 30 messages, somewhere in that range. If we just release a public beta, then you better hunker down, because it's going to be about 100 messages a day or something for the first 3 days. But typically, it's not a high volume list. Then we have another list, the GW-News, which is a post-only list from GW Micro employees. And it's a very low volume list. But that allows us to send you a message that, hey, we just released this. Hey, the Office 2003 sets are up on the web page. Things like that to keep you abreast of what's going on without the overhead of all the GW Info messages that are out there. So lots of ways you can contact us.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like to make sure folks know?
Well, the biggest thing is I would like you to just come out and take a look at WindowEyes. Download a demo of it. Give it a fresh look. You know, if you saw it 5 years ago, don't remember that as what it is today. A lot has changed. We feel that we have many functionality and features above the other screen readers, and vice versa. But you need to look at what's important to you. Is Citrix MetaFrame, is remote computing important? Well, then WindowEyes is an excellent choice. And is Internet Explorer access important? I think then WindowEyes is the best way to do that. So all in all, take a look at it, judge for yourself. If you have questions, problems, let us know, and we'll help you all we can.
Well, Dr. Joffrey, thank you so much for taking the time, especially at the tired end of the show.
At least you allowed me to sit down during this one.
So. Oh, yes, yes.
I'm glad I could do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. For ACB Radio, this is Marlena Lieberg, direct from CSUN 2004.
Next, we hear from Freedom Scientific and Eric Damery and the beginning of the JAWS 5 presentation from CSUN.
There's several things I wanted to cover today. The first thing is I do want to get into the HTML challenge and show you just a little bit about what's there and why I think it's valuable and people ought to use it. Let me just start off by saying it is not a tutorial. Do not hand this over to someone and say, here you go, you can do the internet with this. It's an aid. It's something to help you. They're better off if they go through a class and get the basics. They ought to know their screen reader. They ought to get to get some basic understanding of the internet. It's a good review. If you've already been doing stuff on the internet, I promise you'll learn something from it. So you ought to spend a little time, but it's an aid. It should be used as part of training. Now, the other thing I also think it's good for is for someone who's trying to create accessible web content. Again, it's not going to show you how to do it, but it has some examples. You'll see on there how to create an accessible table by looking at the source, sample source. So there is some good material if you just, if you are trying to create a web page, just take a look at it. Now, I executed this. I executed this HTML challenge exe, and it's installed on my C drive, so it's just under C.
Level 2, local disk left parent C folder new, not select, HL disk, HTML challenge, enter, folder new, HTML underline challenge.
I better explain all these silly noises you're hearing on my computer. That's the speech and sounds manager. Who's using that now? How many hands? Let me see it. Put them up. A dozen, maybe. So Speech and Sounds Manager is new in 5.0, and I'm going to get in and start explaining that. So try and just ignore the sounds going on. I'll explain what they're for.
Effort. Introduction to HTML.
Okay, so the HTML challenge just loaded up in my browser. I hit the tab key.
Introduction to HTML link. Navigation link. Structure and format link.
So each one of these links is going to take you to a page which starts teaching you something.
Place markers link. Personalized settings link. Information about link. Links link. Languages link.
Languages link. Let's go in and take a look.
Effort. Page has one setting and three links. Setting level 1, the HTML language challenge DOS 5.0 is resistant language switching with any supported speech synthesizer. When a web page author indicates the language of an entire page or just part of a page, if the synthesizer use supports that language, DOS uses the language-specific version of the synthesizer the speaker text. The synthesizer must support the language of the information, but the synthesizer does not have to be a SAPI 5 synthesizer. If the synthesizer does not support the language specified for a page or part of a page, DOS still indicates the language of the information. To demonstrate automatic language detection, we start in English and write colon, quote my computer speaks English, quote then we write the same sentence in French, we don't have that out of Francais, and then in Spanish, we don't know that Espanol, and in Portuguese, still don't know what the word is, and the same in German, my computer speaks Deutsch, and in Russian, Russian, dash, and in Italian, video computer, my Italiano, JAWS switches between the languages very smoothly when it can. If JAWS only said, quote Russian, quote instead of reading the Russian text, this indicates that your speech synthesizer does not support the Russian language.
Okay, stop. You get the idea? So whatever part of the challenge you go to, we kind of walk you through and we start explaining what's going to go on, and you get to see it happening. Okay? The place markers challenge is another good one. It kind of demonstrates to someone how to use this place marker technology, which I'm going to be demonstrating to you today. The forms challenge is a great one because anyone here ever try to fill out a form on the internet with a screen reader? It's no small challenge. But for those of you who do this on a regular basis, can you do it?
Yeah.
Are you getting much better at it?
Yes.
With practice, we learn and we get better at it. So the HTML challenge will help to show people how to deal with the checkboxes, the radial buttons, the edit fields, things like that. Turn on the microphone and try not to yell. Okay, so that's a little bit about the HTML challenge. I don't want to spend a lot of time, but I do want to impress upon you, please get it, try it out. It's on the Freedom Scientific training page. You can view it online and play with it right there, or you can download it and install it right on your hard drive as I've done here, okay? Let's talk about the speech and sounds manager a little bit. In 5.0, we released this new solution to getting information. You know, when we started doing screen reading and started creating a product that was going to be able to help explain this very sighted environment to someone who couldn't see it, we did it in the way that screen reading was traditionally done, and that was by describing everything that happens to you when it comes up on the screen. And when you go into a dialogue box using a screen reader for the first time, you can't distinguish what the heck is it reading on the screen and what is it trying to communicate to me about what's on the screen. You know what I mean? When you go to the file open dialog and it says file open, file name colon, edit, star.txt, what is it reading on the screen and what is it communicating? It's telling you that when it says the word edit, it's telling you the type of control, but it doesn't say edit on the screen, does it? No. So with the screen readers, we've been trying to communicate information about the type of controls and maybe the state of the control that the checkbox is checked. Does it say checked on the screen anywhere? No. They put an X in the box, and we just communicate that by saying checked to the user of the screen reader. Now, this information could be given through other ways, through other means. When they came up with Windows, why didn't they just keep going with DOS? What made Bill Gates come up with Windows?
He was sadistic.
No, it was because he wanted to put a computer on everybody's desk, right? Well, everybody wasn't capable of learning DOS. For those of you who were, I congratulate you. But for the rest of us, it wasn't that simple. And Windows was very simple for someone who could see the screen. It was a lot easier to figure out that you're supposed to start at the button that says start. Or if it was a checkbox, you could figure out, well, let me just point this little mousy thing at it and click it, see what happens, and you could figure out what happens. So it was very easy to start to understand and communicate with your applications in the Windows interface. So if we can start communicating some of that information with sounds, it can work better, I think. But it's going to be different for every person.
And that's where we have to leave Eric for this week, but we will be back to rejoin that CSUN presentation about JAWS 5 next week. From me, Dave Williams, and all the Main Menu team, many thanks for listening, and until next time, bye for now.